Welcome to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And here is where we talk with people about things that are going on in alternative types of educations around the world. I have Director Jerry Minsk of the Alternative Education Resource Organization out of New York City. And Jerry has just returned from Seoul, Korea, where there's a conference, an international conference on democratic education. So welcome. Good morning, Jerry. Good to have you here.
Hi, Lon.
Okay. Could you give us a bit of an idea of what a democratic education is all about, and then let's talk about the conference and what was accomplished.
Okay. Well, democratic education, we have democratic schools all around the world, and we're literally talking about the students having a vote about how their school runs. And these schools, in many cases, the kids don't have to go to classes unless they are interested in them. They can work independently. It's based on the concept of a learner-centered approach. Really, almost all the schools involved with our organization have a learner-centered approach, which is based on the idea that children are natural learners. And if you believe that they're natural learners, you wouldn't take the approach that most schools take and have them forced to learn things they're not interested in.
You know, that approach you're talking about would turn mainstream education upside down in that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
One of the criticisms I've heard from kids is that even honor students, they're bored in school. And that's part of it because they have no say. They have to do a lockstep.
It's interesting. When we have students come into a democratic school, they're not, in many cases, not forced to go to any classes and after a while, sometimes they'll say they're bored and we'll say, well, that's great. Now you know that the ideas have to come from you.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to entertain you. And that changes a lot of things, you see.
Oh, yeah.
But kids are natural learners, and if you don't force them to learn things that they're not interested in, they will retain that natural ability to learn. So that's the concept behind democratic schools. We have hundreds around the world. Every year we have a conference called the International Democratic Education Conference, the IDEC. And the first one was in Israel in 1993. And every year since then, we've had one in a different country. This year, it was in Korea. And last year, only for the second time, was it in the United States. And we actually hosted one 10 years before that. This is a worldwide movement, and that's not surprising because many people all over the world realize that the approach to education that the traditional system takes just doesn't work well.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many people were at this conference in Seoul?
Okay. About 500.
About 500. Significant
about five.
Size.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and a lot of students. Now, the interesting thing in Korea is that there are 300 illegal democratic schools in Korea. And before I went to Korea, I was skeptical about whether they could really have democratic schools with our definition, where the students really had that kind of freedom and autonomy. Well, they do, and the reason is because these schools are not regulated because they're not even technically legal. So far, the government has turned a blind eye to it, but then now there's a legislator that wants to pass a law that forces them to register or be closed. Mm-hmm. And so we were part of a big demonstration in Seoul, the capital city, which was covered by all the major media, so I was on national television and in the newspapers and so on, supporting these schools and this phenomenon.
Okay. Now, let's talk about one of the things that I work in and specialize is the kids that are at risk, or troubled teens or struggling teens is the term that I use, and ways to, and I've worked in several schools that work specifically with those. So how effective are these democratic schools for the kids that are, quote unquote, at risk?
Well, you know, I mean, a school that I ran for many years, I would say half the kids would have been considered at risk. I think that almost all children that go to regular schools become at risk after a while because the school is not geared to the kind of learning that they need. Maybe half of them do well sitting at seats in a classroom with a teacher droning in front of them, you know. I don't know, but I think that this just the change of environment is enough to solve the problems for a lot of kids that mm-hmm. that would be at risk. On the other hand, there were people at this conference. There is one particular person who has a school for at-risk kids in Puerto Rico, and it's an incredible school, and he's had incredible success taking a learner-centered approach.
Yeah, what kind of students does he take? You were talking about this a little bit earlier, and it sounds like it's pretty difficult kids.
Well, he takes the toughest kids in Puerto Rico. Gang members and kids, girls with their own children, teenage mothers, and basically the most difficult kids. He's been so successful at this school that the government actually wound up giving him four other schools that they just didn't feel like they were getting anywhere with. And so now he runs five schools. And, you know, just to give you an idea of how different they are, as the kids walk into the school, and I saw this when I visited, they hug and kiss every kid as they come in the door. Mm-hmm. And they, not only that, they have a little school for the children of the mothers that have babies, can you imagine? And so that's part of what they do, too. And I'll tell you an interesting story. One of the schools that Puerto Rico gave him to run, he took over the school that had two different gangs involved with it. So he had one gang coming in the morning, one in the afternoon, the other one in the afternoon. Then apparently one day somebody went over to the school with the intention of killing somebody from the other. And so when he realized this was going on, he closed the school. And everybody was all upset, and they said, "What did you do that for?" I'm not going to have this. I will require, in order to open the school up, an agreement that this is not going to happen again. And sure enough, he got it, and it was from then on a mixture of kids, and they never had another problem like that.
Well, back to this conference. Now, you're seeing a growth in this type of schools around the world, or a growth in the
numbers?
Well,
yes. I mean, see, just like as an example, you know, what happened, can you imagine, in Korea with 300 spontaneous schools growing up all over that country in response to the rigidity of their education, you know, that with the tiger mothers and the kids going to cram school sometimes till 10 o'clock in the evening. And so the people are realizing this is not a good and a healthy approach, no matter how people bend these statistics. And so, yes, it's growing all over the world. And the fact is that this is what you need for this millennium, not just for at-risk kids, but for any kids. But I believe that the way the schools are set up, it creates kids that become at risk.
Well, yeah, I can agree with that with some I've seen from having been in the classroom a number of years ago. How about your own organization, the AERO? What's been the trend of members and the reach that you've had in that in the last several years?
Well, you know, the website is educationrevolution.org, and what we are doing is just trying to create the education revolution, a change in which learning does become learner-centered. The education becomes learner-centered, and we want to see this happen all over the world. And in the process of doing this, we have a conference every year. We also have a School Starters online course that starts in September every year. And we help people start new homeschool resource centers, new schools. And if you go to our website, you'll see a map of about 75 of the new ones that we've helped people start and that are actually up and running. And we also help people find schools that they're looking for, for teachers and for parents and for students. And these are some of the kinds of things that we do to kind of work toward this education revolution.
Okay, and so you're getting increasing numbers of people subscribing to your publications, and it sounds like this is a trend that's maybe beginning to get some traction around the world.
Well, yes, it is. And it's happening. It's just happening everywhere, even places that wouldn't seem so likely. Lately, we've had a lot of people from Arab countries, from Asian countries contact us. Somebody just signed up for our School Starters course from Hong Kong, someone else from Singapore. We have a representative in China, and there are people in China that, you know, that are trying to start these in the mainland. And so, yes, it's happening everywhere. We've had people, for example, last year there was a group of Saudis who were starting a boarding democratic school for Syrian refugee kids in Turkey.
Wow. Oh, that's intriguing. Well, the world is changing. Maybe it's time for the education approach to be changing the 20th century public school model that we've been working with. Okay,
well,
we about ran out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking to Jerry Minsk, the Alternative Education Resource Organization Director, and been talking about the Democratic Education Conference in Seoul, Korea.